Hey everyone, welcome back to the Origine podcast. I'm Jamie.
And I'm Alex. Today we're diving into some really fascinating research about Zika virus, and well, something you might not expect. How it affects babies even after they're born.
Right. And this isn't just about the obvious birth defects we heard so much about during the outbreak. This study shows that prenatal Zika exposure can actually reprogram the immune system in really specific ways.
Yeah, and here's the kicker. It affects boys and girls differently, like completely differently.
So this research comes from a team at Wayne State University, led by researchers including Jahui Ding and Gil Moore. They published this in Nature Communications, and honestly, the implications are pretty huge.
Okay, so let's back up a second. Most people know Zika caused microcephaly, that's the small head size in babies, right? But this study is looking at something else entirely.
Exactly. They're focusing on neutrophils, which are basically the first responders of your immune system. When you get an infection, these cells rush to the scene. But in babies exposed to Zika in the womb, these neutrophils don't work properly later in life.
And this is happening even in babies who seemed totally healthy at birth.
That's the scary part, yeah. So the researchers used a mouse model. They gave pregnant mice a low dose of Zika virus, not enough to cause obvious problems, just enough to trigger an immune response in the placenta.
Interesting. So they're modeling what would happen with a mild or even asymptomatic infection during pregnancy.
Right. And what they found was that male and female placentas responded completely differently to the virus. The male placentas showed this huge inflammatory response. Tons of interferon signaling, IL-1 beta production, all this immune activation.
But not the females?
The female placentas were more focused on metabolic pathways and tissue organization, way less inflammatory signaling. It's like they had totally different strategies for dealing with the same virus.
Okay, so that's wild on its own. But then what happens to the offspring?
So they let the mice give birth naturally. And then at about 5 weeks old, when their immune systems are fully developed, they challenged them with LPS. That's lipopolysaccharide, basically a component of bacterial cell walls that triggers inflammation.
Like testing how their immune systems respond to a bacterial threat.
Exactly. And the male offspring who'd been exposed to Zika in utero, they went into hyperinflammation. Their cytokine levels, those are inflammatory signaling molecules, just skyrocketed, way higher than normal males.
And the females?
Totally fine. No difference from control females. It was only the males showing this exaggerated inflammatory response.
That's really specific. So what's going on at the cellular level?
So they isolated neutrophils from these offspring and did RNA sequencing to look at gene expression. And they found something called A20. It's encoded by a gene called TNFAIP3. Was significantly upregulated in male neutrophils after Zika exposure.
Okay, and what does A20 do?
It's basically a brake on inflammation. It's a negative regulator of NF-kappa B signaling, which is a major inflammatory pathway. So normally, A20 helps prevent excessive inflammation.
Wait, but if it's supposed to reduce inflammation, why are these males showing hyperinflammation?
That's the paradox. So what the researchers found is that when they looked at isolated neutrophils in a dish and stimulated them with LPS, the Zika-exposed neutrophils actually produced fewer cytokines. They were dampened.
So in the body, hyperinflammation, but in the lab, hypoinflammation.
Exactly. And here's what they think is happening. The neutrophils themselves are less responsive, but there are more of them circulating in the blood. They saw increased neutrophil numbers in the bloodstream of Zika-exposed males after LPS challenge.
So it's like quantity over quality?
Kind of, yeah. And they also found that these neutrophils had impaired function in other ways. They couldn't produce reactive oxygen species properly. That's ROS, which neutrophils use to kill pathogens.
So they're not as effective at fighting infections.
Right. And they also couldn't form NETs properly. That's neutrophil extracellular traps. Basically, neutrophils can throw out these web-like structures made of DNA to trap and kill bacteria. But in Zika-exposed offspring, both males and females, net formation was significantly reduced.
Okay, so even though the inflammatory response was different between sexes, both had this functional impairment in their neutrophils.
Exactly. And when they overexpressed A20 in normal male neutrophils, they could reproduce some of these effects. The neutrophils became less activated, produced fewer cytokines in response to LPS.
So A20 is like a key player in this whole process.
Yeah, and here's something really interesting. They found that female neutrophils naturally have higher A20 expression than males, even without Zika exposure. So there's already a sex difference at baseline.
Huh. So females might be starting from a different immune baseline altogether.
Right. And this ties into something called the Developmental Origins of Health and Disease Hypothesis, DOHAD. The idea is that what happens in the womb can program your immune system for life.
So it's not just genetics. It's also the environment in utero.
Exactly. And this study shows that maternal viral infections can have these long-lasting effects. The researchers point out that during the 2016 Zika outbreak, about 95% of babies born to infected mothers appeared normal at birth. But this research suggests they might still have immune dysfunction.
That's a lot of kids who might be at risk for problems down the line.
And it's not just Zika. The researchers mentioned that we've had multiple pandemics, SARS, Ebola, COVID-19. Billions of children have been born during these outbreaks. We need to understand how maternal viral infections affect long-term immunity.
So what are the practical implications here? Like, what should doctors or parents be looking for?
Well, the study suggests that children exposed to viral infections in utero might need long-term immune monitoring. They might be more susceptible to infections later in life, or they might have exaggerated inflammatory responses that could lead to chronic diseases.
And this is sex-specific. So boys and girls might need different monitoring or interventions.
Right. The male offspring in this study showed growth restriction. They were smaller both as fetuses and after birth. And they had this hyper-inflammatory response. Female offspring didn't show those effects as strongly.
It's fascinating that the same viral exposure can have such different outcomes based on sex.
And it all seems to come back to how the placenta responds. The male placentas mounted this huge interferon response, while female placentas focused more on metabolic adaptations. That initial difference in the womb sets up these long-term consequences.
So the placenta is really the key organ here, not just for nutrition, but for immune programming.
Absolutely. And the researchers are now trying to identify the specific placental signaling pathways that program offspring immunity. If we can understand those pathways, maybe we can develop interventions.
That would be huge. Because right now, if you have a mild viral infection during pregnancy, there's not much you can do except wait and see.
Right. And this study also has implications for vaccine responses. The researchers mentioned that Zika-exposed children showed impaired responses to childhood vaccines. So prenatal viral exposure might affect how kids respond to immunizations.
Wow. So this really underscores the importance of preventing infections during pregnancy.
Definitely. And it shows that even mild infections that don't cause obvious birth defects can still have lasting effects on the immune system.
Before we wrap up, I want to go back to something you mentioned earlier. The female neutrophils naturally having higher A20 levels. Does that mean females are generally better at regulating inflammation?
That's a really good question. The data suggests that female neutrophils might be more primed for activation at baseline. They showed enrichment in immune signaling pathways. But they also might have better regulatory mechanisms in place, like higher A20 expression, to prevent excessive inflammation.
So it's like they're ready to respond, but also ready to shut it down when needed.
Exactly. And this might explain some of the sex differences we see in immune-related diseases. Women tend to have stronger immune responses, which is great for fighting infections, but also increases the risk of autoimmune diseases.
Right. Like lupus or rheumatoid arthritis are more common in women.
Yep. And on the flip side, men might be more susceptible to severe infections because their immune systems don't mount as robust a response initially.
So there's this whole balance between being too reactive and not reactive enough.
Exactly. And prenatal exposures like Zika infection can tip that balance in one direction or another, potentially setting kids up for immune problems later in life.
This really makes you think about all the environmental factors that shape our health before we're even born.
Absolutely. And it highlights the need for better prenatal care and monitoring. Pregnant women need access to testing. And if they do get infected, we need to follow their children long-term to catch any immune dysfunction early.
So what's the takeaway for our listeners?
I think the big takeaway is that prenatal viral infections can have hidden, long-lasting effects on the immune system, especially in boys. Even if a baby seems healthy at birth, they might have immune dysregulation that doesn't show up until later when they're challenged by infections or other immune stressors.
And this is true not just for Zika, but potentially for other viral infections during pregnancy.
Right. COVID-19 is a big one to watch. Millions of babies have been born to mothers who had COVID during pregnancy. We need to be following these kids to see if they show similar patterns of immune dysfunction.
That's a really important point. And hopefully research like this will lead to better screening and interventions.
Definitely. The researchers mentioned they're working on identifying the placental pathways involved, which could open up new therapeutic targets. So there's reason for optimism.
Well, this has been a really eye-opening conversation. Thanks for breaking down this complex research, Jamie.
My pleasure, Alex. And thanks to everyone listening. If you want to read the full study, we'll put a link in the show notes. It's published in Nature Communications.
And if you found this interesting, make sure to subscribe and share with anyone who might be interested in prenatal health or immunology.
Until next time, stay curious.
See you next time.